Good morning, everyone, on this beautiful Palm Sunday morning. Welcome to Unity Center for Positive Living. My name is Beth Astarte, and wherever you are on your journey of faith, we're glad you could join us this morning. And if this is your first time here, and I don't think that it is for anybody, but I do encourage everyone to come downstairs afterwards for a time of fellowship after the service. So if you all would please stand up and join us in our welcoming song, Ruha de Kushcha, which means Holy Spirit in Aramaic, and hopefully I didn't butcher it. It'll be led by Mike and Karen Merker. And then afterwards, don't sit down because we're going to take a moment to greet one another.
Creator of all.
go ahead and take a moment to greet one another.
Yeah.
Oh, Arlene.
I'm not just that.
Weird stuff at the top.
And I'm glad your mom is here with us. And all the kids. Thank you. How are you? Yeah, I almost forgot myself.
It's okay.
And then you have today.
Yeah, I figured I'd change it up. Yeah, change it for the season.
Hello, yeah, morning. Hi.
How are you, Terry?
I cheat. Who else do we have online?
Just Sue, but she doesn't have her.
Morning, Sue. That's my mom. She'll never put a picture on.
Morning, Sue, Karen's mom. I'm grateful that Karen is with us.
All right, it is time for announcements. And our first announcement is we do have a special meeting today after the service, a membership meeting. So please meet us downstairs. We'll start shortly after everybody gets a chance to grab something to eat. And then our next announcement is that Circle America is April 27th, and they'll be discussing the movie The Man Who Knew Infinity, which is about an Indian mathematician. Are there any other announcements?
I have a couple. I brought some CDs of mine for sale after service. If anyone's interested, I have a variety. And then we are putting our house up for rent in Fort Perry, Centralia. So if anyone knows of anyone who needs a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house, let us know.
Thank you, Mike.
Yeah.
Any other announcements? All right. Please join me in saying our unity statement together. We believe in our oneness with all life and the power of love. We teach universal principles and values as taught by Jesus and others, revealing the one God presence. We practice prayer, meditation, and service to be conscious of our oneness in God. There is only one presence and one power active as the universe and as my life, God the good. So let's sing Surely the Presence as Mike and Karen lead us.
Surely the presence of God's love is in this place. I can feel the mighty power and the grace. I can feel the rush of angel wings. I see glory on each face. Surely God's love is in this place.
today our reading from the Daily Word is on Palm Sunday. Surprise! On Palm Sunday, I celebrate the divine presence within. Today is Palm Sunday, the commemoration of Jesus' arrival in Jerusalem that symbolizes the awakening of the Christ awareness in humankind. Those who followed Jesus into Jerusalem shouted, "Hosanna! Blessed is the one who comes in the name of the Lord." Imagining this joyous scene, I feel inspired to follow Jesus' actions and express more and more of the love, peace, joy, and light of my Christ nature. As Holy Week begins, I open my heart and mind to more fully embody and share the Christ of my being. I feel blessed knowing others around the world are doing the same. Together, we bring peace and healing to the world and to one another, fulfilling the promise of Jesus. And I invite you all to join me in saying the verse from the Gospel of John, chapter 12, verse 13. So they took branches of palm trees and went out to meet him, shouting, "Hosanna! Blessed is the one who comes in the name of the Lord." So now's our time for our gratitude share. So if anyone has something that they're particularly grateful for this past week, feel free to share it briefly with all of us. We would love to hear it.
I'm grateful for spring break. I spent 3 days hanging out with my mom.
Yay, Eileen is grateful for spring break and the time she got to spend with her mama. I am grateful for the 3 days I got to spend with my grandkids camping. We all survived, and we had a good time.
I'm grateful that I found some old voicemails from my good friend who passed away a year and a half ago, and I thought I had lost the voicemail, so it was really precious to hear her voice again. And my husband is grateful for seeing Scotch Broom because that signals the end of his seasonal allergies.
So Audrey is grateful for finding a recording, a voicemail of a dear friend who had passed, and her husband's grateful that his allergy season is coming to a close with the blooming of the Scotch Broom.
I'm grateful that the weather is getting a lot nicer and warmer. And that Forest Park is an open place to walk the trails.
Nice. Terry's grateful for the beautiful weather and for the trails of Forest Park. I'm with you, Terry. I'm enjoying the beautiful weather and the sunshine as well.
Yes.
All right. Well, let's rise if you'd like as Mike and Karen lead us in our song of joy. I'm so glad I'm here.
So glad I'm here. So glad I'm here. So glad I'm here. Love brought me here.
many of you know, but Joanne is in Australia right now, and she did the slides this week. And on this particular song, I don't know if you noticed all the joy pictures, but I really enjoyed the little kids' faces that were so smiley and everything. And a huge amount of gratitude to Joanne that even halfway around the world, she's willing to do our slides. So today, each week, we have a member of our congregation shares a reading with us. And this morning, we are blessed to have a reading from Eileen Selleck. From the Gospel according to Luke. Jesus proceeded on his journey up to Jerusalem. As he drew near to Bethphage and Bethany, at the place called the Mount of Olives, he sent two of his disciples. He said, "Go into the village opposite you, and as you enter it, you will find a colt tethered on which no one has ever sat. Untie it and bring it here. And if anyone should ask you, 'Why are you untying it?' you will answer, 'The master has need of it.' So those who had been sent went off and found everything just as he had told them. And as they were untying the colt, its owners said to them, 'Why are you untying this colt?' They answered, 'The master has need of it.' So they brought it to Jesus, threw their cloaks over the colt, and helped Jesus to mount. As he rode along, the people were spreading their cloaks on the road. And now, as he was approaching the slope of the Mount of Olives, the whole multitude of his disciples began to praise God aloud with joy for all the mighty deeds they had seen. They proclaimed, 'Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord. Peace in heaven and glory in the highest.' Some of the Pharisees in the crowd said to him, 'Teacher, rebuke your disciples.' He said in reply, 'I tell you, if they keep silent, the stones will cry out.'" And a reflection by Kathleen Norris, adapted from God for Us. To experience a meaningful Holy Week requires a great leap, not only of faith, but of imagination. We are asked to suspend our belief in the scientific method, which replicates experiments in order to replicate results. Our goal in Holy Week is different. We go through the familiar readings and rituals as we've done for years, but we're hoping that something new will emerge from those ancient stories. We are seeking something more than what's on the surface, and in order to find it, we must begin by seeking something less, the humble but thorough joy of children. On Palm Sunday, we stand with the glad crowds who welcomed Jesus into Jerusalem shortly before the annual Passover rituals, marveling that our ordinary day has turned extraordinary. We will need all the certainty of that faith, for our Palm Sunday readings quickly bring us to the heart of suffering. The gospel takes us into Gethsemane, where Jesus is betrayed and arrested. Soon we are hearing the story of his condemnation and death. Palm Sunday reminds us that our world can turn on a dime, that sudden changes in our circumstances can take us straight from praise to lament. But in exercising our God-given imagination, like the poet who first sang Psalm 22, we might also allow God to help us turn our most painful lament into praise. This is the journey of Holy Week. This is the journey of our lives. Thank you, Eileen. Please join me as we affirm together. I am a joyous being of light. I am the love of God in expression. I am grateful for all that I am. I am one with the abundant nature of the universe. I am healthy, active, whole, and happy. I am at peace, knowing everything I need comes to me in the perfect time and in the perfect way. As you know, we have a different speaker each Sunday of the month, and this morning it's my pleasure to introduce to you Licensed Unity teacher Audrey Pitchford, and today's talk is entitled, "Pray Up the Life You Desire."
Good morning, everyone. So two young boys were staying with their grandmother, and they were saying their evening prayers. And the older boy said, "Dear God, please, I would really love to have a dog." And his younger brother said really loud, "Please, God, I really want a bicycle." And his brother said, "Hey, you know, God hears you. You don't have to yell." And the younger brother said, "Well, I know God hears me, but I want to make sure Grandma and Grandpa hear me." So today's talk, oops, is called Pray Up the Life You Desire. Pray Up the Life You Desire. And remember, this is part of our series that we're going through, the book called Pray Up Your Life by Reverend Charlene Emanuel. And Reverend Charlene has a lot to say about prayer, and she's not out to make anyone else's prayer practice bad or wrong. She acknowledges there's as many ways to pray as there are human beings. She has a bunch of different ideas and suggests, try these out. Maybe you'll love them. Maybe they won't work. You can try another idea next time. So she encourages us to experiment with some of her suggestions. And she also says that she believes the more time we spend in prayer, the greater our awareness of our oneness with the divine, the greater our awareness that that divine is always with us and always with and within everyone else and everything else around us. And this is not a surprise to us in Unity, because we know that Unity's fourth basic principle is that we use prayer and meditation to consciously connect with our awareness of the divine, consciously connect. I've heard some people say, every thought is a prayer. Even those worry thoughts are prayers. We may not be conscious of what we're creating sometimes. And so Reverend Charlene says, hey, yeah, the more time we spend in prayer and meditation, the more conscious we become of those thoughts. And what are we creating with our thoughts? Are we creating worry? Are we creating the life that we long to live? So I love this idea of pray up the life you desire, because to me that speaks to the idea of transformation. Transformation. And I don't know about you, but certainly out in the natural world this time of year, I am seeing transformation. These trees and plants that looked dead not very long ago are springing forth with life. The tulip trees, the daffodils, the flowering cherries, just everything is so beautiful and so abundant. And so we can use this outer transformation to remind us, especially because we're on our Lenten journey. Today's Palm Sunday, we're almost at Easter. We can use this outer awareness of what's happening with nature to remind us of our own ability to transform, our own transformation within. Now, for this idea of transformation, in all of her chapters, Reverend Charlene uses what she calls a prayer anchor or a Bible quote to illustrate what she's talking about, to illustrate this idea of praying up the life we desire, of transformation. And before I get into the Bible quote, I always like to remind everyone that in Unity, we practice metaphysical Bible interpretation. So what that means is that we don't spend a lot of time or energy or worry about whether things in the Bible really happened the way they were written down or not. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. We feel like the most important part of the Bible is the metaphysical meaning. And metaphysical literally means beyond the physical. What is under the surface? What is the symbolism? What is the deeper takeaway from this story? And the great thing about metaphysical Bible interpretation is that we each get to do our own. I get to decide what it means to me. Eileen gets to decide what it means to her. We have everyone getting to decide what it means to them. And so sometimes I like to look at other people's meanings just for ideas, but I'm not attached or stuck with someone else's meaning if the passage means something else to me, and neither are you. So the passage this month is in two different translations on your handout, which you'll maybe see now or later, whenever it's okay. There's a translation in the Message version of the Bible. And I sometimes really like that one because that's the translation from the oldest Greek texts to the most modern English. But there's times I also really like some of the older translations. And in this particular case, on our slide, I actually use the older translation just because this is one of my favorite passages. And for some reason, this old language really, really speaks to me. And I'm guessing maybe you all have heard this before. This is from the book of Romans, chapter 12, verse 2. And it says in the King James Version, "Be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God." So I love the words in here. Be not conformed, instead be transformed. And I just, I think those are such interesting words. So I invite your thoughts. As many of you know, whenever I ask you questions, they're not right or wrong questions. I already know what I think. I can share what Unity teaches on some stuff. I can tell you what I think. I would never presume to tell you what you think. So I love asking questions and hearing your thoughts. And so the first part of this that says, be not conformed to this world. What does that mean to you, the idea of being conformed to the world?
Just being your own person.
Okay, okay. Okay, so maybe not being conformed means being my own person, living for my own truth. Thank you, Karen.
Not following another person's consciousness.
Oh yeah, not following another person's consciousness. Yeah, thank you, Terry. So I've had some people describe that as doing your own thinking instead of having someone else think your thoughts for you. Yeah, okay. Any other thoughts on this conforming to the world, what that means to you? Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Not putting myself into a box based on what other people or the world deem might be valuable or might be important. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mike. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I have a few other thoughts, as I usually do. So when I was pondering this passage, the idea of conforming, being conformed to this world, I want to say, first of all, that I don't want to communicate a thought that is bad or wrong to conform to this world. I think there are times that we probably all do it. I certainly have, and maybe you have as well. And we have a path out of this if we don't want to conform to the way of the world. So we'll talk about that in a bit. But some ways maybe of conforming to the world might be going along to get along. Oh, I just won't rock the boat. Conforming to this world might sound like, oh, always or never statements. Oh, that's how it always is. Oh, we always do it that way. Oh, that'll never work. Oh, that never happens. And sometimes when I hear always or never statements, it sounds to me like an agreement has been made with the idea of powerlessness. So that might be conforming with the way of the world. I actually have a story about conforming with always and never thinking. So I started a new job many years ago, and I was taking a vitamin, and I went down the hall and found the drinking fountain, and it didn't work. And I finally choked down this vitamin without water, but I went back to my office area, and I said, oh, hey, the water fountain down there doesn't work. And the people at my new job were like, oh, it never works. It has never worked. That water fountain never works. And I was like, okay, well. And I was new, so I probably didn't know enough to conform. And went online, and I found the instructions for what do we do in this place if there's like a facilities problem. And I saw, oh, there's a way to put in an electronic request. I'm like, okay. So I put in my electronic request, and I said, hey, this is like a safety hazard. Someone could choke on a vitamin or something. The repair crew was down the hall that same afternoon, and they fixed the water fountain.
Wow.
So we all might have times when we buy into conforming with the way of the world. And we also all have that potential within us to be the person who doesn't conform, who sees something different, who moves beyond the always and never thinking to make something happen. Here's a few more ideas about ways of conforming with the world. And I have to say, I have participated in this. Buying into the things that the world says are important: consumerism, materialism, appearance. So it is really okay if we like things like shopping, or if we want to look a certain way. There's nothing wrong with that. I know that the times that I have really participated in this thinking have been when I have thought, oh, I'm doing pretty good because I look like this, or because my health is like that, or because I have these possessions. Because when I do that, when I say that I'm worthy because of my appearance or my possessions or my whatever, what I'm also saying is that other people who don't have this are not worthy, which is not something that I'm proud of. And then, not if, but when my circumstances change, because I had some health things happen where all of a sudden my physical abilities weren't the same, my appearance wasn't the same, if I connect my worth to looking or being able to do certain things, then I'm in for a little bit of a bumpy ride when those things change. And so maybe you've had some conformity thinking along that way as well. You don't have to share here. Conforming with the world can also be watching the news and getting into, oh, isn't it terrible, conversations. Oh, isn't it terrible? Oh, isn't this terrible? Or just complaining. Well, can you believe that blah, 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 blah. Perhaps we've all done it. Yeah. We're going to talk more about compassion for ourselves a little bit later, too. Also, conforming to this world could be labeling stuff out there with what we're feeling in here. Okay, so it could be, you know, that Unity Center for Positive Living is going to have a conversation about dissolution, and being in conformity with ways of the world could be, oh, that's sad. That's sad. Where is sadness? It's not out in the walls or in the carpet or in the ceiling. Sadness may be inside. And it is conforming with the world to put our feelings out here, because it is pretty countercultural to say, I feel sad, mad, glad, whatever we might be feeling. It can be a lot easier to just say, oh, it's a sad situation out there. All right. And again, perhaps we have done all of these. I certainly have. That's why I come up with so many examples from the talk. And even if we have done these conforming activities many times, we can always do something different. We can always transform. We know that spring happens every year. We know that transformation is always possible. I'm guessing everyone in this room has already had transformative experiences, or you probably wouldn't be in the room here today. And so we have a path to transform. And one reason I think this is so powerful is another basic principle that Unity has, and it's our basic principle number 3. Sometimes it's called the law of mind action. Thoughts held in mind produce after their kind. And this means that basically whatever I think about and believe in and invest with emotion is what I'm likely to experience. So if I am investing my energy into, that never works, we've always done it this way, then I'm probably gonna get more of the same. I'm gonna get more of things never working, more of always doing it a certain way. If I'm investing my energy and my time and focus into materialism or consumerism or appearance to feel worthwhile about myself, then I'm going to be hanging on with white knuckles when things change, and I'm not able to connect my self-worth to those transitory things anymore. If I am putting my emotions out there and labeling things as bad, I'm going to be walking around judging and pretty disconnected from my own heart. We know that the law of mind action works. It doesn't care what we're thinking. It doesn't care if we're thinking uplifting thoughts or conformity thoughts. So we always have that choice. We always have that ability to transform. And this passage talks about the way to transform. Be ye transformed by the renewing of your minds. The renewing of your minds. What is that? How do we renew our minds? What does that even mean? What does that mean to you? I have a few thoughts, like always, but what does that mean to you to renew your mind? And how do you do it?
Take a good nap.
A good nap, yes, Mike, thank you. Sure, right. If we are tired, we may not be doing our best thinking. My spouse and I actually have an agreement that we don't talk about big things like late at night, like pretty much after 8 o'clock. We don't have conversations about money, family, chores, anything that we could potentially not have a very good conversation about. Yes. So nap or a good night's sleep.
I think just turning your attention or your thought, like catching yourself in that moment when you're conforming and actually changing your thought in that moment.
Yes, thank you, Beth. So catching myself when I'm conforming and changing my thought. And sometimes we call that mindfulness, like noticing what am I telling myself in my brain? And do I really want to tell myself that? And gosh, what's another option? So thank you. Yeah, yeah. How else can we renew our minds? Rethink our thoughts. I love it. Thank you so much, Phil. There's that old Bible quote that says, repent and sin no more. And the word repent actually comes from the Latin meaning to rethink. So I love that in unity, because the idea of sin means error thoughts, that we get this reminder, we can always rethink. Let's think a new thought. Yeah, yeah. Thank you. Oh, yeah.
Physical that gets you not in your mind.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I like it. Thank you, Mike. Do something that gets us out of our mind and in our body. And Mike mentioned a couple great things. Go outside, get some fresh air, see some nature, go for a walk, move your body. Yeah, all of these things can shift and renew our minds. There are many, many ways to renew our minds. A few other ones that I want to mention, for me, music and singing. There's something vibrational that happens within me when I'm singing, and it changes my thoughts. Now, it depends on what I'm singing. So I like to sing stuff that I find uplifting when I'm struggling. Prayer and meditation. And I'm part of the prayer team at Unity of Olympia. We always talk about that on the prayer team, our job is to hold the high watch with others, especially when they're having trouble seeing it for themselves. And so sometimes going to someone else for prayer, or calling silent unity, or praying with a prayer partner, and asking your prayer partner to hold that vision with you until you can hold it, that vision of transformation by yourself. Community, having people with whom we can spend time and listen to each other and uplift each other. And again, it depends on who our community is. If our community is people who are, you know, doing the always and never conversation, or isn't it terrible, we might look for other people to spend time with. Now, and then meditation, always, especially meditating on our divine powers that are always present, even if we don't see them in the outer, even if the situation and circumstance appears to be something very different than what we're affirming. So our Unity co-founder, Charles Fillmore, identified 12 attributes of the divine that he said are in God and therefore in each of us, not just those of us in a Unity Church on a Sunday morning, but every person on the planet. Every person is an expression of these divine attributes. And the power for the month of April is the power of love, the power of love. And so this might be something that we meditate on, especially if we're having trouble getting our thoughts out of that conforming with the world idea. If we're having trouble renewing our minds, we might meditate on the power of love. I notice every now and then in the media, there's a lot of behaviors that do not tend to unify. And I love that the power of love is defined as, and I should read it for you so I get it right, the ability to attract, to desire, and to unify. Unify. I think that's such an interesting word. And sometimes the behaviors I see in the media are things like shaming and blaming, criticism, or yelling really loud to convince someone that you're wrong and I'm right. And those kinds of behaviors aren't just limited to the media. I don't know about you. I just had dinner with my parents and siblings last night, so there's a little bit of opinions that some people were wrong and some people were right. And when we have that mindset of I'm going to convince you that you're wrong, or I'm going to criticize you for what you're doing, we're not going to create that experience of unity. We're not going to unify. And so we have that opportunity to focus and meditate on the power of divine love and ask ourselves, what would it look like to bring love to this situation? What would it look like to radiate love to this person that I might very strongly disagree with? What would it look like to radiate love to myself in this situation? And so we can always meditate on one of our 12 powers. I love this idea of the power of love. And there's another practice that I wanted to describe for you today, and maybe some of you have heard this practice. This practice didn't come from Unity, but it's very much aligned with Unity teachings. It's from the work of a couple psychologists, Kristen Neff and Christopher Gerner, and it's called mindful self-compassion. Mindful self-compassion. Just curious, has anyone heard of this? Maybe. I think it's been around maybe about 20 years. So mindful self-compassion is the idea of sending love to ourselves. Believing as within, so without, that if we are having difficulty showing love to ourselves, we might have difficulty extending love to others, and vice versa. If we're having difficulty extending love to others, we might be having difficulty sending love to ourselves. And so the practice of mindful self-compassion, there's three steps. Like I said, they're very much aligned with Unity. The first step is mindfulness. Identifying, like Beth mentioned earlier, what am I thinking? What am I feeling? Sometimes, I don't know about you, I can be moving at the speed of light and sound, and it can be a little challenging to just pause and identify what is going on inside my head. What am I telling myself? And with mindfulness, we let go of any judgment about whatever we might have told ourselves or thought. So if I've been thinking those always and never thoughts, or if I've been, you know, labeling things outside me, that's really sad, or that's really terrible, or if I've been participating in conformity thinking, it's not to beat myself up. I'm just trying to notice and identify, huh, okay, all right, this is what my thoughts and feelings are right now. And on a side note, when it comes to feelings, I always like to say, instead of saying I am sad, or I am angry, or I am whatever, I like to say the emotion I'm feeling is sadness. The emotion I'm feeling is anger. And I like to do that because the words I am are very powerful. And I don't want to affirm that sadness or anger is the whole of me. I want to acknowledge that I might feel sadness, anger, joy, elation, disappointment, resentment, a bunch of things. And any emotion has come here to pass. It's come here to show me something about myself and to be addressed so that I can move forward. So mindfulness is our first step in mindful self-compassion. The second step is common humanity. Common humanity. Sometimes when we're going through a hard time, we might start thinking, this is wrong, this is bad, I shouldn't be feeling this way. Nobody else has the same kind of problem. We might start thinking that we're really alone. And common humanity is a way of remembering, in this human life, there's challenges. Likely everyone has experienced a question about whether to continue something or whether to end something. Likely everyone has experienced feelings of sadness. Likely everyone has experienced feelings of disappointment. Likely everyone has caught themselves having conformity thinking. And so we can remember that we're not alone in this human journey. And even better, because the mindful self-compassion practice focuses on common humanity, we can remember our common divinity as well. We can remember, I am not walking this human journey alone. I am always accompanied, blessed, and loved. And so are you, and so are you, and so is everyone. And the divine is here. And that leads us to the third step, where we can lean on that divine presence and radiate compassion and love to ourselves. And sometimes I will even write a statement, or I'll say it in the mirror, and I'll say, Audrey, I am so proud of you for what you are doing right now. I see how hard you're working. I know this has been challenging. I see what you're doing. I completely love and accept you. I'm proud of you. And for me, that can be transformative, to radiate that love to myself. I mentioned earlier, as within, so without. As we grow in our compassion for ourselves, I believe, and I've seen, that we have greater compassion for others and for the world. And as we grow in compassion for others and the world, we often find it easier to have compassion for ourselves. And so this is another way, in my opinion, that we can renew our minds and practice transformation. So we're here today on Palm Sunday. I don't know how many people have been doing anything for Lent. I always love Unity Lent. I grew up in a different tradition with Lent, where Lent was not as fun, and I like Unity Lent quite a bit better, because the tradition for Lent is praying and fasting. And in Unity, we can fast from stuff like, you know, chocolate or ice cream or whatever, but we're encouraged to fast from those ideas that don't serve us. For me, that's a lot more meaningful than, you know, giving up something to eat, is looking at what's in my consciousness. Where are my conformity thoughts? And my challenge this Lent, I don't remember if I shared this with you, is focusing on not taking things personally. So if someone else says or does something, not assigning that a meaning, that it means something about me. And this is of ongoing learning opportunity for me, so I might continue it after Lent. But this is another way, another time for us to practice renewing our minds and transforming our thinking. And historically, Palm Sunday has also been seen as a time of celebration. I looked up a metaphysical interpretation of Palm Sunday before the service, just because that stuff always interests me. And there used to be a Unity minister who's now passed on. His name was Reverend Ed Townley, and he wrote a bunch of metaphysical interpretations for the unity.org website. And here's what he had to say about Palm Sunday. He said, all four gospels tell similar stories of the events of Palm Sunday. Jesus enters Jerusalem riding on a donkey, an image that would have instantly reminded the Jewish crowds of the prophecy of the book of Zechariah, chapter 9, verse 9, which says, rejoice greatly, your king comes to you, triumphant and victorious, is he humble and riding on a donkey, on a colt, the foal of the donkey? So according to Reverend Ed, a king would have been expected to enter in grand chariots